Unfiltered opinion.
Sometimes you have ideas and you're not quite sure why.
Does he secure the bag?
Sometimes you meet people and realize there's probably a reason why you stayed in touch.
Just listen.
Sometimes all the pieces just come together by themselves.
Woo! I'm Jimmy Moyaha.
I'm Nicolette Mashile.
And I'm Simon Brown.
Welcome to Insider Exchange.
The segment of Market Matters is brought to you by our friends at Finalto. We're joined in studio by Ruan Landsberg and Danny Mawas, who is the CEO of the Finalto South Africa business. And I'd like to thank him and Ruan for joining us for this week's Market Matters. And that being said, we're going to be taking a look at some of the market crashes that have been taking place, the gold price, Australian dollar markets, US markets, everything's been going crazy. And this kind of all started last week with the CrowdStrike outage, I suppose.
Yeah.
That was the first thing that...
CrowdStrike shareholder.
I've been a CrowdStrike proponent. I'm a happy yeah. CrowdStrike promoter. I mean, but I suppose this is natural, right? These things happen.
Sure, you mean you're up 50% for the year and now you're red for the year? That's what you're talking about?
It's no, natural. I mean, an outage from a cybersecurity firm is at some point inevitable, but at the same time,
it's also
CrowdStrike.
Their third this year, just that the earlier one was on Linux and no one notices. But also, what
no
it
one
tells
uses
you,
it.
You know, on the one side, it's a really, really bad story. The flip side is it tells you a lot of people are CrowdStrike.
That's like it.
I mean, if they can take down half the global economy, Windows said it was only 8.5 million machines. But if you get the right 8.5 million machines.
Right. They also mentioned something like $5 billion lost in like a few hours. And that's only the tip of the iceberg, I think. Mm.
You say tip of the iceberg, and I'm thinking about the litigation that could follow. I mean, companies can now come out and, you know, we're going to sue CrowdStrike for this and that. America loves litigating. They'll find any reason and any excuse to go sue someone for something. And so is this something that CrowdStrike is going to be going through?
Well, I think, you know, with all of these vendors and providers and so on and so forth, these guys have all of the right T's and C's and clause for not being sued. Mm. But I think, I mean, what I was mentioning to Ron this morning when we were discussing this matter is more around, you know, like over the past decades, governments and authorities have been talking about systemic risk when it comes down to failure of banks. But what about now these tech companies? And that might be, you know, like something that we should start looking into, because I mean, clearly, I mean, that one was quite a big one and it impacted the global economy. So I don't know, food for thought, but I think we're going to read and hear like way more about it in the next few days and next few weeks probably.
So systemic risk is real and it's going to be in the tech space a whole lot more. The AWSs, and I know that they've got, you know, lots of server farms in different places and redundancy and all of that. And depending who wins in November, the Democrats are quite big on some regulation, but the Republicans have been shown themselves to be quite anti-tech as well. So I think there could be a lot more coming. And of course, Europe always has been. But the CrowdStrike, for me, the key thing was it just showed how dominant it is and why I hold it. And I mean, I'm still up on it, but I was up a whole lot more back in July. But it is July.
I remember when I gave out CrowdStrike as a stock pick on a separate show, my main reason was quite simple, is we're moving into a technological age where you have everything going AI, everything going digital and all of that. And the amount of personal information that exists in the digital domain needs cybersecurity. And CrowdStrike was a no-brainer because they were the largest cybersecurity firm. And this crash actually proved that they're, even if they're not the largest in the world, they're a significant player to be crashing banks and financial institutions at the same time, all from one bad update. Yeah. But let's move on to some of the other crashes. I mean,
hold on, I want to get the chart man's view. When does this thing stop falling?
No, look, guys, on the technical side of things, it's too difficult to call, to be 100% honest, obviously, because it is fundamentally driven. And obviously, with a crash like this, we haven't seen a crash like this, especially on this specific stock, however. So, yeah, from a chart perspective, I mean, it's really difficult to know what the consequences will be of the outage itself. Because once again, they say a $5 billion loss, but obviously, like Danny said as well, there can be longer term problems for now. I do believe we'll recover. It's all a good company and obviously things will happen. But from now, I mean, we can't say when it's going to turn around.
I'll help you, Simon. We touched 400 in this month. We're down about 33% for the month. We're at about a $250 support level. I'm bullish on the stock, but from a technical point of view, I can't see why 250 shouldn't be a decent support level for the stock price to bounce off of. We're at 256 at the moment. I think if there are no serious material ramifications going forward, you could very well consolidate around the 250 mark.
That's what I think as well. I mean, I'm not a pro charter by any stretch.
Absolutely. We're no Ruan, but with those are our two cents.
No, well, I see the same, 240.04. That's what I see for key support.
Okay, so $16 a little lower.
You can take that.
Decent support level. Okay, that makes sense. Some of the other crashes that took place this week, Ruan, what did you see?
Well, obviously, the Australian dollar had quite a significant crash, obviously, with the cutting of the prices and obviously with the GDP rising in the US. Mm. So obviously, for that caused also a crash on gold. Obviously, guys taking profits on their gold trade. So we actually discussed it on the previous episode as well, where we were looking for new highs. And I think at the moment, this crash, everyone is getting to that point where we're going into new highs. So let's take some profits off the table. Let's move our money somewhere else. But I still do believe we're still bullish in gold because it is a crash, but it's more pullback, to say the least, on the higher time frames.
Interesting though. So you're seeing it bullish even though you had like this massive correction over the past few days.
And yeah,
knowing that gold was like bullish for like a full month, I think.
Yeah, I still believe it's bullish because I think it's getting to a point where, I mean, just the same with stocks, pretty much everything as well. People, at some time, people are going to take profits. Obviously, with what's happening in the economy of the US, people are taking some profits because they believe that there is a bullish momentum coming into the dollar. But at the end of the day, it's still bullish, and I do believe it will continue going bullish for now.
And it did hit an all-time high, which is always...
What supports Ruan's theory is we are 7 months into the year. Of the 7 months, gold has had only two bearish months, and this current month is still positive. Despite the correction, we've touched 2480. We're still up 2% for the month. So 5 out of 7 months being in the green does suggest that we're still bullish.
But I mean, if you look at the rally that we have been seeing for the past months, and now you're looking at the correction, if you check your Fibonacci retracement, you would see that right now gold is actually at 61%, like 61.8. Mm. So I personally think that if we break 61, then we are definitely heading towards 2.3.
Okay.
But let's see. The market will tell us. I don't know. Like it looks like quite strong correction on the gold market, and I think yes, it has to do a lot with traders taking profit and also probably moving their money away from the gold market for some more safe, let's say, instruments such as the yen. I mean, I read quite a lot about it. It seems like there are like a lot of traders taking moving away from the U.S. market, gold market, and going towards more the Japanese one. Yeah, especially the yen.
But I still think the longer-term story for gold, if we roll out 5 or so years in a higher interest rate, higher inflation environment, central banks buying because suddenly they saw what happened to Russia's dollar reserves and all of those sort of things, for the first time in a long time, there's a strong underpin. It's going to be noisy and messy in the process.
I think the catalyst for sort of smashing through 2600, and it can happen almost instantaneously, is if we start to get data that suggests that we're going to see a U.S. recession. Because we had the U.S. recession picture a little while ago, so sort of last year, maybe the year before. And then we said, no, it's a soft landing. Nothing's going to happen. Everything's under control. And now suddenly the labor market in the U.S. is not as healthy as they thought it was. And the potential for a recession, those conversations are coming back. We're definitely a long way from that. But I think if you see something like that, or you see a huge sell-off start to happen in the U.S. dollar, it could be the last thing that was holding back the gold price.
Yeah, 100%. I think if you just look at all the green data we've had in the past week, for example. But still, the dollar is failing to push higher. Mm. So yes, it is causing the drop-off on the other currency pairs, but the dollar still fails to break higher for the week. So at the moment, we are ranging, and if we can't break through that current 104 level, I mean, that should mean that the dollar should keep selling in the long term, and that obviously leads to higher gold prices, etc.
And that's currently the case, by the way. Like if you look at dollar against euro, for instance, euro is definitely improving, even against the rand, actually. Mm-hmm. Like the exchange rate have been improving by quite a lot, but that's directly linked to the fact that people are selling the dollar right now. Talking about soft landing, right? I think it also depends on, which website or newspaper you're reading. Because no, it's true, though.
Yeah.
It's true because, I mean, the comments are completely different from one to another. Right now, I mean, what I've been, reading and seeing recently is the fact that, yes, the economy improved. The U.S. economy have been improving quite decently when, we compare it to Q1. And if indeed they do manage to do the soft landing maneuver, that's something that they haven't, that the U.S. economy hasn't done for 30 years. Mm. It was like back in the 90s, I think, that they managed to do one. And at the same time, the Fed is saying, I mean, a lot of Fed officials are definitely commenting on this move and saying that, yes, it's highly likely that they're not saying it openly, but they are suggesting that by September, there would be definitely like a drop of their rates. And at the same time, Wall Street is definitely speculating that there would be like a rate cut.
Yeah, they said this morning that it's 100% guaranteed will do it. Yeah,
yeah, they also promised us 6 for this year. Yeah. But there's also the Sham report. I'm not sure I'm saying it right. The SAHM rule recession. So she used to work for the Federal Reserve. And pretty much since the 60s, every single time this thing has triggered, there has been a recession without exception, and it's halfway to a trigger. And the rule is quite simple. A three-month moving average of national unemployment rate, which is U3, rises by half a percentage point or more relative to the minimum three-month average from the previous 12 months. And it's half clock. So if this clocks in at the next jobs data, it's never been wrong. Now, there's always a first.
Unlikely, right? Unlikely. Since the 60s. Yeah. What's the likelihood that it'll suddenly not work
out? So the only one it did miss was the pandemic, but I think we'll give her a pass.
Fair enough. But I suppose with the pandemic, there's also that fact that we have that $2 trillion stimulus that kind of went into the U.S. economy that we haven't accounted for. Yeah. This is something that's never been done historically. So that is a very real perspective there. I suppose the information side of it, as you said, Danny, it depends on where you're getting your information from. There's a lot of information that points towards a certain narrative, perhaps because that's the narrative that suits the market at that time. And as long as you're not getting your information from Fox News. Sorry, go ahead.
and there is an election.
And there's an election. Let's not forget about that. No. Let's not forget about the fact that the Israeli prime minister is currently in the U.S. while the current U.S. president has said he's not running again. Yeah. Donald Trump is coming back. This is could America get any crazier?
Yeah, I think. I mean,
yes. Be careful what you're wishful.
But I think that's quite an interesting point actually, because the U.S. economy is going. It seems like the U.S. economy is getting better. But at the same time, if you look at the local affairs of the country, things are not getting any better.
It looks like South Africa did a couple of years ago, right? Say it. We're all thinking it.
And it's becoming more protection, regardless who wins. Both parties want less immigrants. Both parties want more tariffs. And there's nuances exactly to where, but... Mm.
But even then, even with the nuances towards the tariff conversation and where they want that to go, I think the concern then is it's no longer the world that the US used to control. The pandemic has shown us that we came into the pandemic, everybody was under lockdown, we went straight from a lockdown into a trade war that caught everybody in between, and then we went into actual wars, and it's come out that the dollar's no longer, they're still the most used currency around the world and everything, but the world is no longer dictated by Western terms. Yeah. I mean, everybody, since Brexit's happened, since China and Russia have taken the stances that they've taken, the world has realized that there's a different set of rules that are going to govern the next 10 years. And maybe this is that repositioning. Maybe this time, this 4 or 5 years that we've been going through is a global repositioning of sorts.
I mean, to follow your point, right? I think, yes, since COVID and a little bit before COVID, I think the Americans realized that other big economies were willing to give them some pushback, especially when it comes down to the use of the dollar as trading currency. I mean, we've seen recently, what the BRICS countries have been trying to pull off, where South Africa was even part of the dialogue, where Russia, India, and some other countries, including South Africa, have been trying to, come together and hopefully, come up with like a common currency, some common set of trading rules, between all of these different economies so that they can, I would say, jinx the dollar and the American economy. But I mean, the way that I see it is like, I think it would take them a lot of time because it takes a lot of time to get all of these different nationalities, agreeing on table. If you look at, if we go back and look at, we think of history, if we think of the euro, it took probably something like 25 years or 20 years to come up with the euro as a currency. Yeah. Even the banking system was using like something very similar to the euro. I don't remember the name now, but they were trying to. So basically, they have been testing the euro as a common currency within the banking, system for something like 10 years before introducing the actual euro as a currency. I don't remember the name now, but again, like that's something that's going to take a lot of time. But yes, you're right. I mean, definitely the American economy is, I don't think the American economy is the one is the same one as, you know, what we have seen, what we have been used to see over the past 50 years or 50 years. Yeah,
but I also think it's because, remember, you have two different presidents and they're both pushing different narratives and obviously what they want America to be.
Of course.
So now we're jumping from Trump's administration, obviously what he's pushing his narrative. Then we're jumping to Biden, he's pushing his way. Now we're going back to Trump. Then from there, I mean, we're constantly pushing left and right.
Yeah.
So there's no middle point. So nothing is getting built. Understand, something is getting built halfway, then we're building that halfway. So it's never actually getting to a point where they're building the same thing.
I don't know how I feel about Trump just returning as a president. I mean, the first time around was crazy enough. Could it get any worse? Is there something, for one, I think we've accustomed ourselves to the reality of the fact that if Donald Trump returns as president, it is going to be some level of chaos. We don't really yet know what level of chaos. There's going to be some instability or some volatility that's going to keep us entertained or busy from a market's perspective.
I think entertained.
Right? But are we expecting any surprises?
Sure. I mean, absolutely. I mean, I don't know what
they are. Never count them out, right? Because we never know.
And he talked that Bloomberg Week, the magazine Bloomberg version, the interview he did with them, which predates, it was a late June interview, so it was quite a while ago. But I mean, he's talking 100% tariffs from China. He's talking 10% tariffs for everybody.
Yeah.
And those are inflationary. I mean, make no mistake. You know, the biggest deportation ever. Et cetera, et cetera. I mean, the man is crazy. I mean, I am of the firm view that there's no way for him to win the election. It's just not possible because no Biden voter from 2020 is now going to Trump, but some Trump voters are going to, well, Harris, as the case may be. But yeah.
But if you look at the swing states, though, it seems like Trump is still ahead over Harris. I mean, yeah, I mean, it seems like Harris had a bump for a couple of days when comparing to Trump. But if you look at, again, these kind of states, Trump is, well, for now at least, leading by 2 or 3 points over her. Mm. So I think it's going to be like a very interesting election.
Yeah, also remember, she's only starting her campaign now. So yeah, it is a whole different story. I mean, you've never seen someone campaign for 3 months.
Personally, except for the rest of the world. The UK did an entire thing in 6 weeks.
It's true. In South Africa, we put some
France
posters on
France did it
the,
in 1 week.
We kind of sorted it out. Yeah, I think it's definitely going to be an interesting time. And I, for one, am excited to get to November because I know we don't have any elections looming of our own. So we can just sit back with some popcorn and watch. But unfortunately, that's all we have time for. We've run out of time for this week's Market Matters. But thank you once again to Danny. Thank you to Ruan for joining us. The segment was brought to you by our friends at Finalto.
Thank you.
Thanks, guys, for having us.